This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Malort is a beloved and polarizing spirit in Chicago, and taking shots of the bitter liqueur has become a rite of passage for some. Governor Pritzker even recommended it to people at the DNC, like MSNBC host and former White House press secretary Jen Psaki.
If you come to Chicago, every Chicagoan knows you got to have a shot of Malort. I'm not saying it's the best tasting liqueur. I'm just saying that it's the one that if you want to prove your mettle, you gotta have a shot.
I don't know if that's an endorsement.
I'm gonna try.
Okay. All right. To Chicago.
To Chicago.
You can now find Malort in bars across the city, but it wasn't always that way. Josh Knoll explains why in his new book, Malort, The Redemption of a Revered and Reviled Spirit. It tells the story of the unlikely Chicagoans who helped the drink survive and eventually thrive. So we invited Josh in to talk to us about his book and this Chicago story in full. I asked him to start with why he decided to write about Malort in the first place.
So I wrote for the Tribune about beer and beverages and cocktails and spirits for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I knew that people were very interested in Malort and were fascinated by Malort, felt fervently about Malort, just had this relationship to it that we don't usually have to the things that we eat and drink. And then it also occurred to me, it was literally like a light bulb moment just out of the blue. I knew all that, but I also knew we didn't really know that much about it. We knew a few vague, broad strokes. Some of those broad strokes didn't really connect or make the most sense. And in that light bulb moment, I thought, well, people are interested in this thing. We don't know that much about it. So I'm going to start exploring and see if there's a book in here. Mm-hmm. And then after a few months, I was confident, yes. And you actually tapped into the exact reason why. And it's not just Malort itself, but it's the people and the relationships. And that was the part that really sort of excited me in the whole storytelling.
Absolutely. And you hear in that clip that I just played in the intro, Malort's kind of a way that we prove our mettle. Why is that?
Because, it's complicated, right? People hate it, but people love it.
Right.
And it's got this unique relationship to its consumer that very few things do. You try it, it's jarring, it's very bitter, it's very astringent. I'm excited you're going to taste it for the first time.
Oh my gosh. You're excited?
I'm
glad one of us is.
I'm very excited. Yes. This is going to be a high point in Reset history right here.
It really is.
So people just have this unique relationship to it. A lot of people taste it and they're just so put off by it and they hate it. And then the first thing they think is, I've got to share this experience with someone else.
Right, which is the part I cannot understand. It's like there's something appealing about loving to hate something, but then defending it to non-Chicagoans.
Exactly. And for decades, it was available only in Chicago. So it had, what it has going for it is decades of history, decades of authenticity. Mm-hmm. Most places love when something is uniquely theirs, and I think that's especially true in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So as there was this shift in sort of how we thought about what we ate and drank, we became sort of, let's say, more braver in our eating and drinking, and Malort sort of dovetailed very nicely with that.
Yeah.
And it just sort of started taking off sales were still quite low for a long time, and Malort could have disappeared with no one knowing the difference. But in about 2008 or so, this new generation of bar goers and cocktail drinkers, discovered it and embraced it, and then it just grew, and now it's this sensation. And it's now not only in Chicago, it's in about 32 states now.
Wow. Yeah. Well, let's dig into what we talked about before, the people, right? So it is in the name, Jepson's Malort, mm-hmm. but tell us more about who Carl Jepson was and what he was trying to make here.
So the funny thing is Carl Jepson plays a pretty small role. I mean, we owe him a debt of thanks because he was a real guy. He was a Swedish immigrant, moved here in the 1880s. And in his 60s, this was not a career for him. He was no liquor baron. But in his 60s, he started manufacturing this product and selling it to his fellow Swedish immigrants. Because this is something still had regularly in southern Sweden. It is a part of the culture there. So in that era, probably the 20s or 30s, we don't know exactly, Carl started selling it to fellow Swedes and first-generation children who wanted a taste of home in the liquor bottle. Mm-hmm. He sold it in 1935 to a young liquor executive named George Brody, and George owned it for more than 60 years.
Right.
And at one point, George sells his entire liquor business. He is also a lawyer by training. Sells his entire liquor business in the 1950s to practice law, but keeps one brand and one brand only, mm-hmm. Jepson's Malort. And it was just his life's work, his life's passion, his life's hobby.
Yeah.
And George died in 1999, left the brand to his secretary, a woman named Pat Gablick. Mm-hmm. And Pat had the brand from 1999 to 2018. And she was the one who oversaw its resurgence.
Right.
Though she was baffled by it. She didn't like Malort. She didn't understand how or why it became popular, but she eventually did.
Right. So George Brody, who's the one who took it over from Carl Jepson.
Yep.
Let's talk about marketing for a little bit. How did George market it? Because you got some ads in your book that I thought were quite interesting.
Interesting, yeah. They're dated, for sure.
They're dated. I mean, are you man enough to drink Jepson?
Are you man enough? And so George knew, I mean, so it gets back to the question, why would he keep this one brand and this of all brands? And so I asked Pat, his former secretary, and I also interviewed George's son. Those are the two people close to him who I was able to sort of ask again and again, why? Why did he keep this brand? What fascinated him mm-hmm. about it? And that was, they just said it was a challenge. And he enjoyed the marketing. He enjoyed the storytelling. He knew it was a polarizing spirit. He could have kept a gin or a vodka or something. But what's the fun in that? That would have been easy. So George really invested in marketing, and he took out newspaper ads and initially tried to position it, which I thought was hilarious, as a finer spirit.
Yes.
Something that you need to just sit with to understand, and then you can revel in its elegance. And he realized quickly that that wasn't going to work.
That's not going to work.
So at that point, he pivoted to, are you man enough to drink Jepson's? And that, in fact, wound up being his audience, where the blue-collar factory workers were talking through the 60s into the early 70s. And he built a nice little business, but much smaller than it was today. And that was, until now, Malort's heyday.
Yeah.
And so by leaning into that masculinity and all that
stuff. Are you man enough to drink our two-fisted liquor?
Two-fisted liquor, yep.
I was like, what is this? Okay, so he then leaves it to Pat Gablick, his secretary, as you mentioned.
Secretary plus, let's
secretary
say.
Secretary plus.
That was part of what I thought. Wait, he left it to his secretary? What's the story there? And that there was a nice story there.
Yeah, and she's got like a different approach, right?
Well, she has no approach. She actually just learned how to operate Malort the way George did, which was as a flailing, dying brand. She was the only person in the company. She operated the brand from her condo on Lakeshore Drive and had no sales staff, no marketing staff, no nothing. It was just her, and she just kept doing it the same way that George had showed her. Mm-hmm. And sales were terrible for the first 10 years or so. And then,
yeah, and then the popularity starts to rise. This is now due to a string of chance encounters with some dedicated enthusiasts who saw, I guess, some more potential in the drink. So Peter Strom, Chris Debba, and Sam Meckling.
Correct.
Saw some potential in Malort that Pat didn't see.
Yeah, and so Peter was this young guy. He's Swedish, Swedish heritage, and was fascinated by Chicago bar culture and history and all these things. And he discovers Malort, and he's fascinated by it. And he was the first person to reach out to Pat and say, all Pat saw were the sales, and the sales were terrible. But Peter knew from being in the bars that Malort was starting to have a moment. And mm-hmm. so he actually hunted her down and said, I'm this young guy. I'm this enthusiast. I love Malort. And this was before Malort was even really much of a thing like it is now. And he said, I think that the tide is turning. And she thought he was nuts. She said, what are you talking about?
Oh
no one's drinking this stuff. He said, I'm telling you, something is shifting. And so Peter brings in his friend Chris, who's a web marketer and website designer. And they built the first website for Malort. And slowly word began to spread. More and more people were talking about it and sharing it and talking about it on social media, which factored in. And then this other guy, Sam Meckling, who you mentioned, he, like Peter, loved Malort from the bars.
Wow.
And he reached out to Pat, and then he got involved. And then slowly this thing just grows and grows. And it from 2014, 15, 16, it was the hottest stuff going in Chicago.
All right. You've convinced me.
Is it time?
I think it's time.
Oh, yeah.
It's time for us to try this. So I have lived here nearly 4 years, Josh, and you're the first person that's actually gotten me to producers have pitched this before, this
really?
Idea.
And you've shot them down?
I've shot it down until you wrote this book.
Man, I knew there was a secret reason that I wrote this book. I mean, I didn't know what it was.
You wrote it for me.
This is the moment right here.
All right, so
Sasha was going to chase it with orange juice immediately, and I told her very respectfully, can't do it.
I mean, it's still here. It's still right next to me.
Just give it a minute. Give it a minute, because it's really the initial taste actually isn't so bad. It's the after effects. So let's see how this goes over.
Cheers.
Together?
Yeah.
Cheers. Oh, the whole thing?
All of it. Go. Oh, yeah. Oh, this is good.
Oh, God.
Are you okay?
Oh.
So if I say it's delicious, you're disagreeing with me.
Oh, this is horrible.
Okay. She looks shell-shocked and a little confused.
What's in here?
Horrified, even, maybe. So it's a pretty simple product, believe it or not.
Is this the wormwood?
Yeah. So it's vodka, basically grain-neutral spirit, and then it's aged with wormwood, which is a, as you can see, bitter. Bitter and astringent herb. So now it's really settling in. You getting that? That really dry bitterness?
You're not letting me drink the orange juice?
You know what? I think you've done your part. OJ it up.
Can I OJ it up?
OJ.
Okay. I'm sorry, if I'm disappointing anybody that's listening right now, I have to.
You know, you made it this far, and I respect.
It tastes like, I don't even know what that is. Like,
it tastes like.
It's like licorice mixed with like, maybe if like I licked a battery or something.
That's good.
I don't know.
An old corroded battery.
Ooh.
I get rubber bands, personally.
How was my Malort face?
Excellent. Actually, did someone get a picture of it in there? Is that memorialized? That's your new social picture.
Yeah, so I won't be drinking this again anytime soon.
Oh.
But, I mean, it's clearly cemented in the psyche of some Chicagoans, Josh. I mean, do you think it has a place beyond just trying it once as a dare or a prank?
That's a really good question, because once it really started to take off, Peter Strom and Sam Meckling and all these people were really wrestling with that.
It's like it doesn't stop. I'm trying to listen to you, but I can't.
That's the genius. I could just sing a song instead.
No, keep talking.
they wrestled with, how do we make this something that people will not want to have just one time and then be done with it forever? It's the one-time prank, and you've had it, and then you're done. And you know, there wasn't a lot they could do to ensure that, but Chicago just sort of did it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago just wrapped its arms around it. And whenever a lot of, you know, people have someone from out of town here, time to take them to the bar and pour them their first shot of Malort.
And there are efforts to actually use this as a mixer in cocktails?
Believe it or not, it can be used brilliantly in cocktails. It needs to be used very smartly and sparingly, but it can be used really well. There are some really wonderful Malort cocktails out there.
Okay.
It needs a lot of sugar to balance it out, as you might expect.
So it's no longer the underdog. It's now owned by CH Distillers. Celebrities like Drake have tried it.
Drake hated it.
Gosh. How does this change the ethos of the spirit, you think? I mean, does it lose some of its appeal now that it's so popular?
That's a good question, too. It probably a little bit, just because it was such an underdog for a while and so unique and so unique to Chicago. And now it is more mainstream and it is more widely available. And it's now sort of gone from this outsider punk rock status to a little more, mainstream. I mean, there are bars and the most mainstream bars in, say, Lincoln Park never would have had it 15 years ago. Ever. And now those bars all
now
have
it's there.
It. Yes, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, does something get lost a little bit in that transition? Probably, but... You know, I mean, I think the success is wonderful, too. It's a great and makes for a great narrative.
Ooh, it sure does. All right, we'll leave it there. That's Josh Noel, who's author of Malort, The Redemption of a Revered and Reviled Spirit. Great book. Thank you for teaching me so much.
Thank you. And thank you for having that shot. I enjoyed that.
Oh, gosh.
This episode of The Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and mixed by Ari Mejia. It was edited by Dan Tucker. You can support the work we do on Reset by liking and subscribing to our podcast. We drop new episodes every weekday with a special one on Saturday. You can also sign up for our newsletter. Head to wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.